we inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance, character, and character, hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
Welcome to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, and Walker's with me today. So this is one of those rare occasions where the audience is, I don't know if I should say blessed, Walker, or...
hopefully.
You know, is this the lump in, a lump of coal in their stocking for Christmas?
Surely not.
That they get both of us at once, or does this mean that they've been nice
Either we're a blessing or we're a curse. and surely, Rick, as long as we've been doing this, we're not bringing, you know, coal and a curse on people.
Yeah, it's good stuff. It's good stuff.
I think we're a blessing, but
well, and we are a week out, right? Christmas is right around the corner. This is we're right up. Just a week away, and I don't know. Do you know Bill Federer?
Yeah.
I don't know if you know Bill, American Minute. Man, that guy can teach more in 10 minutes than I can do in 5 hours. I mean, it just rolls off. His brain is like an absolute computer. And anyway, so I was learning a ton about just a bunch of that history with him just this morning. Anyway, so Christmas coming up. Lots of crazy stuff going on in the world, as always. Interesting weekend. At some point over the weekend, ABC settled with Donald Trump, and I'm laughing. ABC is going to pay $15 million towards the Donald Trump Presidential Museum. Walker, that's just poetic justice. I mean, what do we do with that?
It is, and you would think that ABC would know better, and Stephanopoulos would know better. I mean, this guy's been in quote-unquote journalism for a long time, but he didn't. He made false accusations about President Trump live on the air, when he was interviewing Representative Nancy Mace
refused to apologize.
This is a pretty quick settlement. I mean, in the scheme of the civil realm, I mean, this was under a year that it took for them to settle. But look, for them to settle for $15 million, Rick, shows that they were 100% in the wrong on this.
That's right. And $1 million in legal fees, too. So they you know, $16 million total, the apology, the whole nine yards. And you know, for the record, listen, George Stephanopoulos is a political hack. I know that's not a nice way to say it, but he is. I mean, he was Clinton's, you know, essentially architect with James Carville.
Yes.
And I never understood that one, right? Like, I mean, when do you see a Republican, you know, true operative, like this is a political operative for one side or the other, becoming the neutral, you know, respected Sunday morning news show guy? I mean, that makes no sense. I never understood that.
Yeah.
But they acted like it was, you know, just perfectly normal. And you could, you know, guys like us, when we watch, we see the bias. We know exactly how he's skewing things as he's reporting it. But this one just went way too far. And I'm a pretty passionate guy about the whole defamation thing because I've never liked the New York Times v. Sullivan standard where if you're a public figure – man, it is hard.
I know, that's absurd.
Yeah. Because it can be false. It can be absolutely false. And if the person claims, well, I thought it was true.
Right.
Or you can't prove that they were malicious or that you had damages. It's like this four-part test, and it's crazy. And I think it could change. I mean, we've heard Thomas and a couple other justices hint towards saying, hey, we'd love to see a challenge come this way because, you know, we think the standard's too high for a public figure to be able to prove defamation. So,
yeah, I mean, yeah, I don't think the whole principle behind defamation and slander, I don't think there should be exemptions. I don't know why there is. Yeah. I mean, the you have to be careful about what you say. That's a biblical standard.
That's right.
Have to be careful about what you say. And when you say things you shouldn't, you should apologize. And in this case, you should, you know, they're settling because they don't want to go to trial. But just to remind our audience what Stephanopoulos did, he said 10 times during an interview with Nancy Mace, that President Trump raped E. Jean Carroll. He said that, and he used that word. He didn't say assault. He said he raped her 10. He said it 10 times during like a 5-minute interview with Representative Nancy Mace. So that's why ABC is paying $15 million.
It's
because he made a terrible mistake, and he repeated it 10 times.
Yeah,
on live television.
So. Even as she tried to correct him, and he refused, you know, and that is, And
these
listen,
are,
we,
and Rick, these are the people that are quote unquote hosting the presidential debates.
Right. Right.
It's a joke. Why on earth did he and ABC ever qualify to host a debate?
And we've always said, listen, we're obviously for free speech and for people to be able to say what they believe and say what they think, and even if they're crazy and they're wrong or whatever. But we've also always said, with free speech comes responsibility. With all of our freedoms comes responsibility. Second Amendment, man, we're big on Second Amendment and people having the right to carry. But with that comes responsibility. Go get trained. Do it responsibly. Same thing with your speech. It's a weapon, and it can harm people, and it can destroy lives. And so, yeah, I think it's a really good sign, man. And even the, now Trump's threatening to sue all these other people for other incidences that have happened. So it'll be interesting, man. It's going to be interesting. But I thought we'd start with that piece of good news as the tide is turning. There's so much, too, Walker, that even behind the scenes that's going on internationally, Trump's not even sworn in yet, and you've got people capitulating or rearranging or changing their plans. And it's just, man, the Trump effect is real. And of course, we'll see January 20th an even greater change. But it's just it's an exciting time to be alive for sure.
Yeah, speaking of change, Rick, all that Trump is going to have to fix is kind of mountainous. When you look at what all has been destroyed by Biden and his crew, just like on the economic front, not even talking maybe foreign policy and all these wars that have broken out, but just on the economic front, I mean, President Trump and his team, and I think they can do it, no doubt, but there's a lot of ground to make up on this economic damage that's been done to families when you look lost wages to inflation. So there's a lot of optimism, but, we're going to have to kind of keep the pressure on Washington to be persistent because, even under best case scenario, we're looking at 24 to 48 months to really – kind of get back lost ground on the economic front. So
yeah, Walker, I'm a little bit concerned just that you look back. I mean, I was just a kid, but I made a documentary later in life about Ronald Reagan and his economic policy, specifically the tax cuts of '81 and how bad the economy it was, and how when he did that, it didn't get better immediately. It takes time for those things to kick in, and it was about a year and a half into those tax cuts that things were just starting to turn, and his whole administration was trying to get him to reverse course and all this. And he was, this was a guy that went to college at Eureka College and studied economics long before John Maynard Keynes was even, popular at all or being taught in universities. And so that's why he was a supply side economics guy. But it didn't get better immediately. And so I'm a little concerned that, we're going in with all this momentum and it's going to dampen the momentum when people don't see results immediately.
Yeah.
I mean, on the good side, I'm hearing people say that, in the finance world that, right after the election, within 48 hours, people were immediately starting to do deals, starting to loosen up cash. Everybody was just kind of on hold, not knowing, if we're going to get four more years of what we've seen over the last 4 years, people were really afraid to make any moves, start new businesses, do investments, all that kind of stuff. And it was like, when that election happened, it was like all of a sudden the dam broke loose and everybody's going, okay, let's go.
Yeah.
But that is, like you're saying, that the fundamentals, it's going to take time. I was going to ask you if you had an opinion on this. It looked like they're saying Jerome Powell will still head up the Fed, finish up his term, which doesn't end until, I think, 26. Okay. Yeah. I didn't know if you had an opinion on that. I have not. I don't know that I do. I don't know enough about.
I don't think there's anything magical about Powell or not Powell.
Yeah.
The reality is that Powell, is he going to be a political hack or not? That's the question. And he probably will be. I mean, he's kind of shown that when he, made sure to lower rates before the election and kind of kowtow to Biden, but he's going to really have to concede some stuff to President Trump if he wants to stay in there, and because the rates have to come down. That's a fact.
I agree.
I understand the concerns with inflation, but look, the rates didn't cause inflation, and honestly aren't fixing inflation directly.
Yeah.
They fix it indirectly by cooling the economy, but the problem is that Washington's spending too much money. So. Yep. I think the rates can come down, and I don't think that's gonna cause inflation to flare back up. If inflation flares back up, it's because of other means.
Yeah. You mentioned the families that are in pain, man. They're paying the price for government's bad decisions.
Well, you can't afford a house.
Yeah.
I mean, young couples, newlyweds, aren't being able to afford a traditional house because the houses are running like $180 a square foot. I mean, it's patently absurd.
Yeah.
And then the new builds are outpriced because of the construction cost. So interest rates are going to have to come down. And Powell, you know, I don't think we need to go down to artificially low rates, but 3%, 4%, 4.5%, 5% is pretty normal.
I agree, man. It's not like you and honestly, they don't have to do that much. They don't have to go back to the 1% stuff.
I agree. You need to be able to buy a house for 3.5% to 4% interest rate.
Yeah.
That's normal, and that's not inflationary. But all of this started because Washington printed $7 trillion in 2.5 years.
Yeah, they threw all that money on the market.
My point is, I don't want to hear Powell tell me anything about I can't lower rates because inflation's still high.
Yeah,
don't give me that. I mean, don't give me that because that's hurting average people and business owners.
That's right. That's right.
So, and he had no problem lowering rates right before the election. So,
well, what about this? You know, continuing resolution that they're talking about doing. I was trying to look this morning. Is that going to be? Because I had heard a little bit that they were trying to do some spending bills that would go all the way through Trump's first year and a little bit into his second year.
Yeah.
Is this continuing resolution, does that do that, or is that just for a few months?
We don't really know because the text hasn't been released. The House is supposed to vote on it tomorrow.
You're kidding me. And they still don't have that. This is going to be one of those midnight 2,000-page
Well, this is under Mike Johnson. I don't know what on earth is going on with Mike Johnson.
Terrible. Come on, Mike.
But the text hasn't been released yet, and they're supposed to have a 72-hour rule that the Freedom Caucus negotiated as part of Mike Johnson's speakership.
That's right.
They could have 3 days to read the bill because it's 1,500 pages.
Yeah.
But the government funding expires on Friday evening. So, no, they don't have the text yet. That was as of this morning. It could have been released between then and now. But to your point, Rick, this is supposed to go through March. That's the word on the street, is that this is supposed to go through March, and then President Trump gets to renegotiate new spending about 60 days into his presidency. So I think that'll probably hold true. I mean, it would be a real poison pill if they tried to push that funding out farther because it ties President Trump's hands behind his back.
Especially with the things that he campaigned on and the things that people have been most excited about is this whole Doge thing and coming in and cutting and actually getting rid of some agencies.
Another thing, Rick, we need to keep an eye on is this, you know, whatever kind of reconciliation they try to do after the new year with President Trump and with the tax cuts and things like that, I think we need to look more permanent because a lot of this reconciliation stuff is bound by different rules and procedures, and a lot of it can't be permanent.
Yeah.
Based on the rules and procedures. So I just think there's got to be enough Democrats in the Senate that are interested in common sense stuff like tax cuts that they can get them, you know, to cross over and vote for a bill.
Yeah.
But I just think we need to really aim high is my point.
Well, you got to capitalize, man. We got to capitalize on this momentum that everybody's feeling. You know, there's such a – if it becomes an empty win, right, if they just go rearrange the chairs on the deck of the Titanic, then Republicans are going to be hurting as bad as Democrats are right now in a couple of years. But if they do the real change, if they do the big stuff and they use this momentum and they force this stuff through and they do it quickly, they could see a shift in the culture for decades to come. And the voting in the culture, but
Rick,
you got to do the big stuff.
Yeah, I agree. I think on the economic front, I think the first thing President Trump's going to have to do, and he's talked about this, is declare a national energy emergency. I genuinely believe in my heart it is a national emergency, the energy problem, because remember Biden drained our strategic supply.
That's right.
So we've got to get that restocked
after Trump had filled it up. By the way,
correct.
Yeah.
We've got
to
get that restocked without hurting prices.
Yeah, drill, baby, drill.
Yeah.
And he's made it clear he wants to do that, and I think the industry is ready. And, man, we've got the resources. We need to use them wisely and put America back on top on this. We could be exporting big time.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, which also helps us in our negotiations with Russia and everything else. So that's a centerpiece of what he's been saying he would do. So ought to be good. Walker Wildman sitting in with me today. I'm Rick Green. It's At the Court. And normally you get Walker on Monday, Wednesday, Friday. You get an extra dose today. And we get to do this once in a while together. Stay with us. We'll be back. You're listening to At the Court.
As Christians, how can we even begin to impact others when we live in a culture where truth is relative? It all starts with God's Word. Join us for Activate Summit 2025 at Cadence Bank Conference Center in Tupelo, Mississippi, June 12th through the 14th, 2025. The theme is Biblical Bedrock, building on the authority of Scripture, and it's designed to help you acknowledge the Bible's authority and submit to the clear teaching of Scripture. Hear from Abraham Hamilton III.
The Lord has planted us here so that we make our space better.
Ed Battagliano.
We use those kind of terms, be the hands and feet of Jesus. What would Jesus do if he were here?
And Alex McFarland.
God created because it was his will.
The main sessions are for ages 13 and up, while Activate Kids is a separate track for ages 6 through 12. Register for Activate Summit 2025 by visiting activate.afa.net/summit. Enter code EARLYBIRD20 at checkout for 20% off tickets before January 1st.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. And you got both of us today on this Tuesday, 1 week away from Christmas. So Merry Christmas a little early to everybody. Walker, before we move on, I was just looking on the break there on inflation. Just to kind of comprehend what happened. So Trump had an inflation rate of 1.4% when he left. And inflation has gone up cumulatively over the Biden years 21%. So basically everything is at least a fifth more than it was when he left office. And then, you know, wages, of course, have not kept up. So there's like a, what did it say in this article? I forget how much less.
A deficit.
Wages. Yeah. So you've got you're making less when it's inflation adjusted. So even if your pay went up, it didn't go up as much as groceries and everything else was going up, so you definitely have less at the end of the month on average to spend on what you got. And so the interesting thing about this article is it's saying, based on all of the damage that was done during those 4 years with Biden, it is going to take time, probably, you know, several more years of inflation being high in order to get, you know, get everything back. So if the Reagan years were any indication, you had a couple of really tough years when he first came in. But then Robert Bartley from Wall Street Journal wrote a book called The Seven Fat Years, because he said right after that, then you had the greatest economic expansion in you know, non-military in history. And so that's, I think, what we have a chance to look forward to if the policies are there that we've been hearing about.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, to our discussion earlier, energy is going to play a large part. Yeah. And President Trump's going to, he's really going to have to declare a national energy emergency, which I think the grounds are there for, to really take down some of the red tape and expedite the oil production, refining capacity. You talked about during the break, exporting energy. There's no reason we shouldn't be able to export energy to Europe. Also building out nuclear power facilities. I mean, that's the way of the future. Even the left is adopting that now.
Yeah, well, you remember when, I don't know if you listened to the Rogan interview with Trump or not, but when Trump went on Rogan right before the election, they got into that topic, you know, I was shocked, man. He knew, like, the type of cement that's used, and he knew all these details. I was going, wow, I had no idea he knew that much about nuclear. And that was both of their points, was that we don't use this because of our perception from Chernobyl and all the stuff in the past. Because of our perception, we don't realize, actually, this is a great tool and asset that we haven't used that we need to use.
Yeah, it is. And these massive tech companies, these data centers, are realizing that, and they're beginning to invest in nuclear. And they're building their data centers around where there are nuclear power plants, and you look at you run the math on like how many million homes one nuclear facility can power. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I think there's one over, I think on the East Coast, maybe in Georgia or North Carolina. But anyway, it powers like millions. One nuclear power plant like powers like three or four states. So it's amazing, and it's a no-brainer.
And they said something on that interview about, and I'm very ignorant about this subject, I need to learn more, but they said something in that interview about that the future would be smaller plants, more of them, but smaller, and I don't know why.
Yeah, like miniature, miniature reactors that are, that's exactly right, that power like a data center. Like you've got Now, you'll have to have all kinds of rigorous safety standards and stuff, which we've got OSHA for that, right?
You're not making me feel better.
We're no stranger to safety standards, but they're like mini reactors that power like a city, and the reactors like around the city. So you're not having to run, you know, thousands of miles worth of power lines to get to the reactor. They're basically setting up these mini reactors in cities and towns.
Exactly. Hey, one bad piece of news, obviously. I wanted to get your thoughts on this one, the Wisconsin shooting, Christian school. Read Sean Foyt's wife actually went to that school. Heartbreaking what we're seeing out of there. You know, I think it's important to remind people, first of all, look, we live in a fallen world. There's evil. You know, suicide and murder is not new, and suicidal murderers tend to want to take people with them. And unfortunately, you know, I'll be surprised if it's not the case. It would be an anomaly if this kid was not on psychotropic drugs. I mean, in every one of these school shootings for the past 25, 30 years, you go down the list, they had some sort of rewiring of the brain happening from these psychotropic drugs. And, you know, we're in a world that has embraced moral relativism and taught our children that there's no right and wrong, there's no truth, you do what feels good, and then they're, you know, got this anxiety and all these things, and it's just a bad formula. And the last thing I'll say on it is, you know, I mean, I say all that to say nothing new under the sun. It's a sinful world. It's a fallen world. But we've done things culturally that have increased these things happening. And then, of course, as you know, I'm very much into having a sheepdog, a trained person to stop the wolf. When the bad person shows up, you've got to have a trained good guy or good gal. And these Christian schools and churches that refuse to think about security, I just want to exhort them right now. Get people trained. Get some people on your staff. I don't care if it's the cafeteria worker, if it's the principal, if it's the teachers. Get them trained and make it possible for them to carry on campus, trained to do so, so that you stop these threats. Every time this happens, every time there's a mass murder event, the proximity of a trained sheepdog is the determining factor in how many deaths there are. And what you want is for only the perpetrator to be the one that has to be stopped. You know, in some of these situations, in that Indiana mall, when that young man stopped the threat, there could have been 100 people killed that day, and there were two or three people killed, but he saved dozens and dozens of lives because he stepped in. So anyway, all that to say, I just want to encourage any of our principals, pastors, and others that are listening right now, talk to people that you know in your community that know security and that know how to train, and get your teachers and some of your administrators trained. We train for free for teachers. If you want to come down to Patriot Academy and do it, we'll train you for free. But I'm just telling you, man, my heart grieves when I see these situations. And too often people respond to these things by saying, it's the gun. We got to stop the guns. And we all know that's an inanimate object. It's no different than driving a car into a crowd, which is what a lot of, you know, terrorist actions have been over the last few years. It's not the inanimate object. It's the heart of man. And we have to be able to stop that threat when they show up. So praying for the school, praying for the families, but also exhorting leaders across the country to do Proverbs 27:12. A wise person foresees danger and takes precaution. A simpleton or a fool walks blindly on and suffers the consequences.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And you know, the Genesis truth is that evil exists in the world because that's of the fall of man. So we will always, unfortunately, have evil in the world until our Savior returns and sets up his kingdom. But also, to your point, Rick, the problem of the human heart is often ignored. It is, and we can, you know, we can debate policy and safety standards and resource officers and having good guys with a gun, and that's all part of the equation when you're looking at dealing with fallen man. But we just can't overlook the heart problem and the breakdown of the family. You know, we don't know all the ins and outs of this person, that this supposed female that committed the shooting, who was a student, but what you notice in the vast majority of these instances where young people engage in a shooting, any type of violence, the vast majority of the time, if not like 90%+ of the time, they come from broken homes.
Yeah.
Either dad's not there or mom's not there, or neither one of them are there. Divorce, you know, infidelity, drugs, abuse, the list goes on. And it just sets these young people up for a terrible time. And then they have, you know, mental health issues and confidence issues. And then you throw on top of all that, all this wokeness that we're that we're putting on young people. It's not shocking.
Yeah. And then just the technology stuff, right? I mean, just the
constant with social media
stuff on social media.
Yeah, the depression.
And the depression and the anxiety that comes from all that. And it's just bad for the brain, especially at that age, right? I mean, it's hard enough to be 15, right?
Yeah.
You got all this crazy stuff going on with your body and hormones, and it's the teenage stuff and just social. And so, you know, life's tough enough.
Exactly.
But you hit the nail on the head, man. The family is the core unit. And without that, and none of us are perfect parents and no perfect family. And that's not what we're saying. We're not guilting people and all that. We're saying the culture needs to come back to saying the family's important. And we're going to invest all of our structures in society to support the family instead of constantly tearing it down.
Yes.
And just the whole idea that, you know, trying to even instead of, I mean, I don't know how far down down the rabbit hole we want to go here, but even just the way that culture and the feminist movement has made it like somehow if you're a stay-at-home mom and you invest totally in your kids for the first few years or even while they're at home, you know, for those 20 years, that somehow you're less of a woman or you're less of, you know, somehow you're you know, not as contributing to society. What a lie. What a horrible lie from the pit of hell. I mean, we need to get back to saying, hey, families that make the family unit and honoring God with the family
it's a noble thing. It's a virtuous thing.
It's a noble thing, man. It's good for the culture. It's good for society. It's good for the future. It's not just good for your kid or for your family. It's good for that neighborhood. You know, getting to where we value that again. And I think there's a swing back. I mean, just like in all these other areas. I mean, you got this. My wife Kara was talking about this the other day. Well, even in response to the shooting, she was saying, you know, the same thing you just said, man. Wait, that you cannot have that kind of stuff going on that creates that environment for a kid without a parent knowing, unless the parent is either mentally or physically not there, right?
Correct.
They're just not checked
disengaged.
In. Disengaged completely. Yep. But she was saying just the other day, she was like, you know, it's becoming popular again. These young ladies are saying, I want to
have
be
children.
Focused on my kids. I want to be focused on family. And I can do career in my 50s and 60s if I want, or 40s or whatever after the kids are gone. But man, I want that family unit. And Walker, I can't tell you how many people, older folks that have looked at our families and said, I wish I had that. I wish I had not, I mean, and I'm talking people that ended up chose not to have kids.
Yeah.
So they have no legacy by choice. They didn't want to do it.
Yeah.
And so I think there's a real pendulum swing coming back to wanting that family unit. And that's good.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. And look, the case for the family is a biblical case. It's a natural law case as well.
That's right.
If we want to have future generations. But also, it's a public policy interest.
That's right.
And our leaders ought to wake up to this. And some of them are. Some of them talk about it on occasion. But, you know, for example, when we have a tragic incident like this, or when we have shootings every weekend in Chicago, which has like become the norm, you know, those leaders need to wake up to the reality that we need dads at home. And that doesn't cost the taxpayers a single penny to tell dads that you need to be at home raising your children. You need to be at home disciplining your young boys and teaching them what it's like to be a man and be respectful and to contribute to society. But these, you know, these deadbeat parents, they deserve criticism. But instead, I got to tell you, man,
that was one of the few times that I gave props to Barack Obama. That was one of the things in his presidency that he did bring attention to, right? That fatherhood was important, that these dads that abandon families is part of the, you know, problem in society. And so you're right. I mean, the more we can get political leaders to say what you just said and to bring an emphasis to it, the better. It's good for the whole
country. And we're working on this now as far as the welfare programs and how they actually incentivize out of wedlock births. There's so much that can be done. It's a complex issue, but it's not. It's not complex. There are a variety of ways to approach it is what I'm getting at.
Yeah.
And you mentioned we need to have, I don't know why we don't have armed, you know, officers, and some states are working on this, but armed officers, you know, to protect our young people.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer. And
it's sickening to me that when we don't, and we send them in there as sitting ducks, and these states that outlaw being able to carry on a school campus and don't even allow employees to carry that are trained to do that or try
it's
to discourage that. It's so backwards, and it's just foolish. They've bought the propaganda that it's the gun, and that sort of thing. So, hey, before we go to break, I got to ask you, I'm sure you're really down about this, but AOC did not get chosen as the as the House Oversight Committee ranking member, and I wondered what your thoughts were. I'm sure you were cheering for her, right? I mean, there's nothing better than Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez ranting on the microphone. Yeah. I mean, nothing better for Republicans because it just makes people flee the Democrat Party.
You know what it signals to me, Rick, is that the Democrats still don't have their act together.
Yeah.
I mean, we're sitting, what, a month after, over 6 weeks, 5 to 6 weeks after the election, and the Democrats still don't have their act together. Like, they have no plan.
Yeah.
And this is exhibit A of this. The fact that they're having this inter-party spat and they don't know who their leaders are is indicative that they still haven't gotten their act together. So I think every day that goes by when the Democrats are in disarray and Nancy Pelosi and AOC are arguing over who's gonna be in charge is a good day for the Republicans to continue outmaneuvering the Democrats.
Yeah, I'm wondering how long it's going to take for their wake up because, you know, they took a shellacking in the election. And there's a cultural shift happening right now, and they're bleeding, they're losing all of these middle of the road people that aren't just like not being Democrats. They're quite literally coming over to the Republican Party and now calling themselves Trumpsters and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's a massive
shift.
I'll tell you what,
Rick. This is I don't want to get too optimistic here. I don't want us to get too relaxed. This fight over our culture is a deep, long fight, and you and I talk about
there,
this
man.
All the
yeah,
time. It's
absolutely.
A generational fight.
That's right.
But I will say this, that the difference in the Republican Party today as opposed to the McCain, the Bush, the Romney years is that there's actually people in the party that are thinking generational. They're thinking long term.
That's right.
There are people in their 30s, 40s that are in major positions within the party in the conservative movement. So,
look at some of these Trump appointees in their 20s.
And J.D.
man.
Vance.
I mean,
and Vance himself is the youngest VP.
That's right.
I believe.
That's right.
So,
yeah.
So my point is that the conservatives we're set up for success here.
That's right.
Like 12-year, 15-year success, but we've got to capitalize on the opportunity.
Amen. Amen. And we've got some great young leaders coming out. Of course, Patriot Academy, I'm biased, obviously, but some of our grads now in West Virginia House, Ohio, Maine, all over the place. There's a lot of good people getting elected. And I'm encouraged. I'm encouraged. We got a lot to be thankful for in 2024 that's happened, but a lot of work to do in 2025. Quick break. We'll be back. You're listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio with your host, Rick Green.
Welcome back to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. I'm Rick Green, America's Constitution Coach, here with Walker Wildman today. And Walker, I feel like I should sing the old McDonald's song, but be like, old New Jersey was a state, here a drone, there a drone, everywhere a drone, drone. But you don't want me to sing, I know, because we'll lose all of our listeners.
Yeah, just the thought of you singing, Rick, is pretty cringeworthy.
Just the thought of it. Thanks, man. Yeah.
I mean, you're good at a lot of things, Rick.
Yeah,
but
not singing.
You can't be good at everything.
Yeah. You're right. You're
Tis
right.
The
yeah.
season.
That's right. I had a deal with my wife's family. They all sing, and so when I ran for office, 25 years ago, we had a deal. I didn't sing, and they didn't give speeches. It worked out great. They sang. I gave the speeches. It was all good. Okay, so drones, guys. What the world, man? I mean, they're everywhere. You got all these different theories, but still no real answers.
Yeah, I think the government has indirectly said that it's their drones, and here's why I'm saying that. So they tried to send John Kirby on Brett Baier, I think yesterday evening or Sunday evening, to kind of calm everybody down. But all they did was say that we're aware of these drones, and they made some kind of comment like these drones are a combination of government, commercial, and hobbyist, which is like, that's a non-answer.
Yeah.
But basically, they're admitting that some of these drones are government drones.
Huh.
But Rick, I was on X before the show, and I saw this mayor of Belleville in New Jersey. I think it's near Essex County. But he said that according to a publicly available government report that in early December, on the 2nd of December, radioactive material went missing from a port that was in a shipping container, went missing from a port in New Jersey, and that possibly explains why these drones are flying all over New Jersey, is because they're on the hunt for this missing radioactive material.
And can they somehow fish it out? I mean, like, are they? I guess they have some kind of technology that can.
Yeah, I've read where this technology has been around for nearly 20 years. That DHS requested back in the early 2000s. That is drones that can detect radiation or radioactive material.
Interesting.
When you put all of that into context, it kind of makes sense. Now, if that's true, it's rather shocking that there's radioactive material that's gone missing and the government isn't telling us.
Where's Jack Bauer when we need him? We need, we have to.
But this alert was put out by the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission on December 2nd. And, the notification was put out a couple of days ago, but the incident occurred. Supposedly happened
2 weeks ago.
Yeah, on December 2nd. Yeah. So the first notification went out on December 5th. This is all publicly available information, so no conspiracy theories here. That might explain all the drones over New Jersey.
Man, it's crazy.
But Rick, I don't think one thing that I've been frustrated about, and I think we're behind on, is I don't think we have the broad capacity to down these drones.
Yeah.
I think we have deployable technology like for war zones. But I don't think domestically we have rapid response technology to down these drones.
No, I was on a show last night, and there was a guest on, and I'm blanking on the guy's name, but he runs some company where they're designing these attachments. It's an attachment to a rifle. Like, I don't remember exactly how it worked, but anyway, to take down drones, but for the military. And my question, I wasn't interviewing him; I was just one of the panelists on, but I still, in my turn to answer, said to the guy, I was like, I want to know when I can get one of those. Like, when's the civilian one going to be available so I can shoot down drones coming over my ranch? But I think you're right, just in terms of even our domestic law enforcement being able to, if there was.
Yeah.
Because this is obviously not to scare people. This is just to be aware of what's going on. Again, a wise person takes precaution. I mean, think about how easy it would to have a shipping container full of drones that somehow gets here. You know, and or right now with the border being open for the last 4 years is already here somewhere in the U.S. So you could literally launch
yes.
a drone attack, you know, from within the U.S. It's not something that would have to cross the border. We've had an open border for 4 years. So, I think you're right.
And I didn't realize this until I started reading up this week, Rick, but our laws are very outdated on this issue. For example, state and local law enforcement are not permitted to shoot down drones. Even if the drones are breaking the law, they're not allowed to shoot down drones. You have to call the feds in. And how long is that going to take?
Right.
So I think that's just an outdated way of approaching this. Also, private citizens aren't allowed to shoot down drones, even if the drones are violating their property.
Yeah, I saw some guy actually got arrested for it.
Yeah.
They had video
over in Arizona,
of it.
I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, he shot it down like a Walmart drone.
And he was smiling the whole time.
Yeah, and they busted him. And it's like, why are y'all busting this guy? But yet they're flying drones over people's property, taking pictures of their personal residence.
Right.
And you guys, you know, drag your feet on it. So, the drone warfare, I think that's the way of the future.
And
I think if we don't get up to speed on this and be able to combat these domestically, I think we're going to have real problems on our hands.
Well, I've wondered, I don't know if I've wondered this out loud on radio yet, but even a lot of the money that we sent to Ukraine and equipment we sent to Ukraine, which I was very much against all of that, but I wondered if part of that was our military testing stuff, right? Testing these kind of things or, kind of learning this new warfare, and that somehow that's how they justified a lot of these big figures that we heard. It wasn't just for Ukraine. It was actually for us to be able to test.
To like field test stuff?
Yeah, literally in a war type situation.
Well, we know.
Okay, maybe that's how they convinced Mike Johnson and all these other guys to support that money.
Well, we know that the money was going to reimburse or to restock our supplies. So like we weren't Now, some of the money just went as cash to Ukraine, which is a problem, but some of it was reimbursements, if you see what I'm saying. Like, yeah, for example, yeah. Lockheed Martin would send 1,000 missiles, and this is just an example, to Ukraine, but then Lockheed Martin—
we had to spend the money to restock. Yeah.
They would be reimbursed to restock the U.S. supply, where we have brand-new missiles, basically give Ukraine the old stuff, we get the new stuff.
Yeah.
That's how they sold a lot of these congressmen on this stuff. Now, I still don't agree with the money. I think we can just restock our own supply without blowing money on Ukraine. But yeah, that definitely did happen. But yeah, drone warfare, and Elon Musk actually mentioned this the other day, but we need to get outside of this mindset of using F-15s to shoot down drones, because that is an expensive and outdated approach. And how do you do that safely over domestic soil?
You know me, man, I'm always going to be rubbed the wrong way if it's feds over state, you know, federal law enforcement over state or local law enforcement. I mean, the founders did not think that the federal government should have law enforcement capabilities at all, and that should always be state and local. So just the idea that we're not going to allow, think of you know, my home state of Texas and the budget that DPS, Department of Public Safety, and the professionals that live here and all of that, you know, the idea that we couldn't come up with our own plan to deal with that we're literally preempted by the feds, that's crazy.
Yeah, it is. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
And these mayors and sheriffs in New Jersey are absolutely furious about this, and they're starting to actually speak out about it. And actually, one of the congressmen from New Jersey has actually presented a law that would help address and enable state and local law enforcement to down these drones over their jurisdictions.
As they should be able to. Absolutely. Okay, we only have a few minutes left, Walker. I got to ask you, and I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this, so no prep at all, but I used to love having your dad on Wall Builders to talk about the, you know, naughty and nice and which companies should have support and shouldn't. How can people best vote with their dollars in the final week of Christmas as they go to spend their money?
Well, I can tell you the one place not to shop, and that's Target, because our boycott is still going strong 8 years later.
Yes.
Target's a major aggressor on this whole wokeness garbage. But as far as other stores, we encourage people to shop local. To support local small businesses and even some of these regional businesses that are still, you know, owned by someone in your area. That's what we encourage people to do. And if you notice these stores that are just intentionally ignoring Christmas, like they go out of their way to use Happy Holidays on every one of their ads,
That's
intentional stuff. I mean, somebody had to sit down and say, look, we're not going to use Merry Christmas because it's Christmas. So we encourage people to shop local, you know, shop from family-owned small businesses in your community. And, you know, when you have to use the big box retailers, go to the ones that use the word Merry Christmas in their advertising. And a lot of these stores have gotten a lot better at this. You know, Walmart, others have done better at using the word Merry Christmas. So we've won the war on Christmas for the most part. But, you know, it's always good to stay diligent. But, yeah, our number one tip for people is to shop local, because that's, you know, that's the only surefire way to know where your money's going and who it's supporting.
Yeah, I think you're right. We won the war because I've almost not heard a single person say Happy Holidays without someone responding, Merry Christmas.
Yeah.
You know, so there's far fewer even saying Happy Holidays. Nothing, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that's a horrible phrase or anything, but it's been such a purposeful effort to try to not say Christmas. And over the last few years.
Well, then we don't, you know, unlike Martin Luther King Jr. Day, we don't say Happy Holidays, right?
That's right.
Or on, like, you know, New Year's Day or all these other federal holidays are Easter, you know, we don't go Happy Holidays.
Right.
So it's like, and then there's the age old excuse from advertisers is, well, we don't want to have to redo our ads after Thanksgiving and then after Christmas to include New Year. So we just do Happy Holidays. It's like, guys, y'all are doing all this fancy geo-targeting of ads. You've got 7 different variations to appeal to different audiences, and you're telling me you can't swap out ads from Happy Thanksgiving to Merry Christmas after Thanksgiving?
Right.
It's like that's an invalid excuse.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, final question I have for you today, as you know, we're getting close to ending 2024, and I don't think we're co-hosting again this month, so it'll be January before we co-host again. What do you see 2025 as kind of put in context of the culture revolution that we've been a part of over the last few years, fighting off Marxism, now winning this election? What do you think is the most important thing for us to do in 2025?
Yeah, I think 2025 will be the year of beginning to rebuild our nation and rebuild our families and our communities. And there's a lot of work that has to be done, but we have to capitalize. There's a lot of momentum against the wokeness. There's a lot of momentum against the sexual deviancy and the LGBT agenda. So I just think we have to capitalize on that. And one target area that we're working on is parental rights, because there is a massive threat underway to go after parental rights, and they're using the guise of the LGBT agenda to go after parental rights. So I think we've got to shore up parental rights. We've got to revitalize the economy. And to your point earlier in the program, we have to make marriage and family cool again. And it's got to be a new thing. It's got to be a positive thing to get married, stay married, have children, raise a family, contribute to your community, and build community, and continue to train up patriots like you guys are doing over at Patriot Academy.
What you just described is William Wilberforce in England, man. He said, God gave me two great things. One, to ban end the slave trade, but two, have a restoration of manners, morals, to make being good fashionable again. And that's what I just heard you say, is to make family and the right priorities cool again, to make it what people they're not doing it just out of a sense of duty. They're doing it because they want it. They know that God's way is not only right, it works best. You're actually going to have the most joy at the end of the day if you have those kids and grandkids and that family to enjoy that legacy. That's why when I was mentioning that earlier about people that have said how much they wish they had what guys like you and I have and our families, and they realize, man, I missed out on some of the greatest blessings. And I think you're right, man. We have to make it cool. I like the way you said it. We got to make it cool again. It's got to be cool to basically do it God's way.
Yeah, and that's right, Rick. And we can't miss out on this opportunity. I mean, this is a generational opportunity.
That's right.
This isn't just President Trump obviously is the leader of this Make America Great Again movement. But we've got to continue our diligence. I mean, the way that we got here is through diligence, right? And through hard work. We've got to continue it, because there's so much work that has to be done. But I think, I think God clearly is not finished with America. He's given us a reprieve. And so our duty as patriots and as believers is to maximize this opportunity. And so that's my chief challenge for those listening right now.
Yeah, this is the window of opportunity. The window is cracked open, and we're going to shove it open and dive through. And millions of people are paying attention like never before. So we're going to convert those people to the principles of biblical principles of liberty. We're going to get them equipped to be good citizens. I could walk around. I'm pumped, man. I'm excited about 2025. I think American Family has been positioned perfectly for this. Patriot Academy, Wall Builders, all these groups that we've been working with. It's just like you can see how God's moved all these pieces of the puzzle together. But now the hard work, right? The hard work's not over. The hard work's really just beginning.
Yep.
We're in that point in Nehemiah where the king has given permission to go rebuild the walls. We the people are the king here, and they've given permission to rebuild the walls. Now it's time for us to go rebuild. Let's lay those bricks, folks. And you that are listening right now, you're the bricklayers. You are the ones that will rebuild liberty in your community. So start looking for how you can get educated, equipped, and inspired. Be sure and tune in, obviously, to At the Core to get that, but then go take action in your community. Thanks to Walker Wildman for joining me today. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to At the Core with Walker Wildman and Rick Green. According to a recent study of hundreds of post-abortive women, 60% reported that they would have preferred to give birth if they just received more support from others or had more financial security. That's where Preborn steps in. Preborn is there for women in their darkest hour, deciding between the life and death of their precious child. The reality is women are being pressured to make this fatal decision, and they're being told that their babies are just a clump of cells. Preborn welcomes women with God's love and introduces them to the beautiful life growing inside of them. That doubles their baby's chance at life. When you support Preborn, you're not only supporting women, you empower them. Your donation of $28 will help a woman to make a choice that she won't have to regret for the rest of her life. It'll give her the ultimate blessing, life. Your love can save a life. Just dial #250 and say the word baby. That's #250, baby. Or visit preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.